Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we are on a Monday. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. I love weekends where big trades happen in sports, and increasingly they're happening in the NFL. Used to be an NBA and baseball thing. The NFL's got a lot of young general managers, and they like trading players, and that wasn't the NFL we grew up with, Joy Taylor, but the NFL now is a trading league. It's like maybe even to a greater level than baseball and basketball.
This particular NFL offseason has been like an NBA free agency period.
It's incredible, and it's fun.
But it's a lot of movers and shakers.
Now, usually, I'll start my show with this today. Usually, if a really good team gets a great player, we celebrate it. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. I felt it was kind of desperate. It felt like Seattle was saying, all right, we've done such a poor job building our offensive and defensive lines. We've kind of whiffed on so many first-round picks. Let's just get a big headline and a big star, and maybe it can cover our arse. Listen, I know he's expensive. I don't want to pay a ton for a safety, but he is great. I wouldn't give up 2 first rounds and a third and a starter for a safety. But Seattle does this if they believe he gets us to a Super Bowl. Now, Honey Badger was really valuable to the Chiefs this year. I mean, he's a guy that really solved the back end of their defense, and Jamal Adams plays a lot like him. Seattle's going to be very good this year. I'm not disputing that. But Seattle only won one game last year, all year by more than one score. I'm going to throw something up. If you think Seattle's a Super Bowl team, they had 11 possession wins. That doesn't happen. That's just insane. That'll never happen again. And whereas San Francisco, the Niners outscored people by 169 points, Baltimore outscored people by 249 points, Seattle outscored people all year by 7 points. Folks, they got holes on this roster, namely their offensive and defensive lines. And Jamal Adams is going to – it's a big swing. It's a big swing, and it's also a big salary cap-eating swing. And listen, I kind of feel like Seattle's trying to make up ground for a lot of bad picks in the first round and allowing their offensive and defensive lines to erode. God, in division, just stay in their division. San Francisco is so much better than Seattle on the O-line and defense line. It's not even close. It's not even close, and Seattle knows it. We are at such a deficit, O-line and D-line, we got to make it up. Now, this morning, would I rather be the Seahawks than the Jets? Of course I would. I've got Russell Wilson. I got Pete Carroll. And Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, and Russell Wilson are playmakers in their prime. So, yes, I'd rather be the Seahawks than the Jets this morning. But that's not the Seahawks' standard, being better than the New York Jets. That's not their standard. Their standard is Kansas City, Andy Reid and Mahomes. Their standard's Baltimore, Lamar and John Harbaugh in that secondary. Their standard is the Saints. Their standard is the Niners. And all four of those teams, I think, not only have better O-line and D-line play and better overall rosters and fewer holes, but they also have better vision. I had an NFL exec say to me after this past draft, a really good one, what the hell are they doing up there? I mean, last year at this time, they went and got Jadeveon Clowney. Headline, star, wow. Where's that a year later? Where's that one a year later? I just don't see the vision with Seattle. You know what I see? I see Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson's unbelievable. And Russell Wilson makes bad draft picks and a bad O-line and an average D-line and a lack of vision work. And I like Pete Carroll, but right now I think he has too much power in the organization. I think he's the one that makes these moves and really gets this stuff done. Seattle hasn't had a meaningful playoff win in 5 years. Yes, Yes, they beat Carson Wentz-less Philly last year. Yes, they beat the Lions. Yes, they were outplayed by Minnesota, whose kicker missed the chip shot. This is a lot of money, and I don't know the vision, and they got bigger issues, and safety isn't one of them. It's a big swing, a huge swing, but it feels to me like it's trying to cover up other issues in the organization. Now, let's take it from a Jets perspective. The Jets will not be as good this year. Jamal Adams is a really good football player. But the simplest thing I can say about this is that Joe Douglas, the general manager of the Jets, had a very good Saturday. I had an NFL exec say, listen, man, the Steelers got Minkah Fitzpatrick for one first-rounder. And we know the Steelers are well-run. Seattle spent two first-rounders and a third and a starting safety. Joe Douglas had a very good Saturday for the Jets. But Joe Douglas is in a really bad spot. He's just tearing down from the studs the organization to rebuild it. He's got a suboptimal owner. He's replacing a GM that was incompetent. He's got a head coach that appears to be, I don't know, not communicating with his star players. The Jets are in a weird spot. Joe Douglas is their life preserver. Highly respected. Usually here's the way it works. You do what Baltimore or Kansas City's doing. You draft this young quarterback, you pay him nothing for 3 or 4 years, and because of that, you can give Lamar all sorts of free agent help and Mahomes all sorts of help, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, young quarterback, I'm paying him nothing. He's got nothing but stars around him. That's what the Jets would like to do because they're not paying Sam Darnold anything. Instead, Joe Douglas has to come in and undo all of it and let go of star players to get draft picks because the owners aren't very good, the coach doesn't communicate, and the previous GM was a disaster. I told you this after the draft with the previous GM. I had a GM call me and say it's the worst draft I've ever seen. He goes, after the first pick, it made no sense. That was two drafts ago. When the Jets didn't fire him before the draft, they let him do the draft, which was awful. Then they fired him a couple weeks later. What? So Joe Douglas had a great Saturday, I believe. But the standard for the Jets now, they're not close to the Bills roster. They're not as good as the Patriots. And I don't think by about week 7 or 8, they're going to be as good as the Dolphins with Tua starting. It's a fourth place team. The playbook in the NFL is simple. Draft your quarterback in the first round, and when you're not paying him, surround him with a bunch of free agents. That got Russell Wilson a Super Bowl. It just got Patrick Mahomes a Super Bowl. This year I'm picking it gets Lamar Jackson a Super Bowl, and instead Sam Darnold, they got rid of his star because they just got to tear this down to the studs, start over, and this was the first process. I like Jamal Adams. He's really good, and I do think he fits Seattle way better than the Jets because Seattle's got leadership and the Jets don't. So for one guy with the Jets, it was a great Saturday, Joe Douglas. He's terrific. He got a ton for a safety, and it gives them some openings now because Le'Veon Bell's probably gone in a year, and C.J. Mosley, a couple more years. You're not paying anybody. But the Jets are one of the 7 or 8 teams in the NFL. You can just take them and say, okay, let's not worry about them in the Super Bowl. And generally in the NFL, there's only 3 or 4 of those. There's about 8, and the Jets are one of them. All right, coming up next, there are a lot of people saying the Jets were clear-cut winners. A lot of people are saying that. But there's something very interesting about Jamal Adams, and not that he's the future of the NFL. That would be too grand. But he is new and unique. And we're seeing more players in all sports like Jamal Adams, and you better be very careful giving them away.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Now, a lot of people believe just because historically you don't get two first-round picks, a third-round pick, and a starting safety for a safety, regardless of how good the safety is. Minkah Fitzpatrick's terrific. Steelers gave up one first-round pick. So Seattle probably overpaid. But I will say this about Jamal Adams. When I was a kid growing up, the best second baseman in baseball was Joe Morgan of the Cincinnati Reds, and he looked like a second baseman. And then the best shortstop was Ozzie Smith, and he was too small to play like a corner position on the infield, or didn't have the arm or the size for an outfield. And Ozzie Smith, athletic, that's a shortstop. Joe Morgan, that's a second baseman. And then you start seeing in baseball guys like A-Rod, and you're like, oh, he could be a Hall of Famer at short or at third. And shortstops now were really good, and they had power. And I watched the Dodgers this weekend. They had multiple guys that could play multiple positions. And A-Rod was the first guy I'm like, oh, he could be a Hall of Famer at two different positions. That's not the way baseball was as a kid. But athletes are bigger and stronger. And LeBron James has been this in basketball. Oh, you mean he can be a point guard and lead the NBA in assists? Or he could just guard your four? LeBron's a positionless basketball player. He's just good. Actually great. And you just put him anywhere on the floor you want. He'll guard Derrick Rose. He'll guard your four. He'll guard anybody. And here comes Jamal Adams. He's positionless. And you're seeing this more and more. Derwin James of the Chargers is a little like this. Last year, the Jets lined up Jamal Adams at linebacker more than they lined him up at safety. They also lined him up at edge rusher and at linebacker and at strong safety. And he made plays in all of them. In Pete Carroll's history, he started as a DB coach. Pete Carroll's history is taking really talented young defensive backs and making them stars like Earl Thomas. Pete knows DBs. They got good corners now again. Pete knows DBs, and he is looking at Jamal Adams and saying, I can put this dude all over the field and make plays, and we don't have much of a pass rush anyway. I just got better there. That I get. That I totally get. Isaiah Simmons, remember the kid out of Clemson that got drafted by Arizona? He is one of these positionless players, and it's not a knock on him. Isaiah Simmons is all over the field. When you get these athletes now, guys used to look like a corner and look like a safety. And that's just not the way it is anymore. You get these unique basketball, football, baseball players where you're like, this guy can play first or third or second. And I think for Jamal Adams, I think Pete Carroll looks at him and think, you know what? I'm not going to get anybody at the end of the first round the next 2 years that good, that I can mold into my defense and create situational pass rushes, which Seattle, by the way, last couple of years has struggled with.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So the NFL has a top 100 players list on NFL.com. They release the top 25 players. It's very interesting how what players are impressed by. Players are impressed by big, strong athletes. Of course they are. Because there's a certain, like, fidelity. There's a certain truth inside a locker room. You know, it's like Steph Curry. I love Steph Curry. I think Steph Curry is one of the best players in NBA history. Players look at Steph Curry. They're like, nah, come on, man. Come on. Really? Little skinny Steph Curry? They love Westbrook. Well, Steph Curry's a better player than Westbrook. But Westbrook's got a 47-inch vertical. Westbrook is going 100 miles an hour. He's a bigger, just a stronger, more exhilarating athlete. Nobody would dispute that. I mean, Russell Westbrook next to Steph Curry, run up and down the court. One guy is Superman. The other guy is like, fascinating. A fascinating player who's the best shooter of all time. But players prefer Westbrook over Steph Curry. GMs like the fact that Curry can play with everybody, and everybody's better with Curry, and everybody struggles with Westbrook, though Westbrook is unbelievable, and I've said it before. I'd pay to watch him play. He's unbelievable. He's like MJ, LeBron. There's a handful of athletes in NBA history you're like, there's better than the rest of these dudes. The rest of these dudes are great. So I look at this list of players. Lavonte David of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a linebacker, number 100. If he's the 100 best player in this league, the NFL's in good shape because that dude can just play like he's one of the best young linebackers in football, and they have him at 100. But 13 spots ahead of him, they have Josh Allen, the quarterback for Buffalo. I mean, come on now. Big, strong, get it. Runs over people, big arm, I get it. Josh Allen's not a top 100 player in the NFL. Come on now. Now, again, players look at him. He's 6'6". He can run. And I think he has the strongest arm in the NFL. But great players do not unravel against the best teams or coaches. Josh Allen has played the Patriots 3 times. His completion percentage is 48%. His passer rating is 56. And he has more picks than touchdowns. That's not what Mahomes or Russell Wilson, that's not what they look like against New England. Now, I'm not saying New England's not a hard out. Go ask Jared Goff. They're a tough out. but great football players. Ronnie Stanley is on this list. He's a left tackle. When Ronnie Stanley, if he plays Khalil Mack, he's not going to unravel. Laremy Tunsil's not going to unravel against the good edge rusher. Now, I'm not saying you'll have your best Sunday, but in 27 NFL starts, Josh Allen has completed 56% of his throws. That's atrocious. That is terrible. I know he can run. Great. But that's not a top 100 football player in the NFL. Kyler Murray is below Josh Allen. At this point, I would say this about Josh Allen. Josh Allen has a really good coach. I think they have the best defense in the league. I really do. I think it's better top to bottom than San Francisco. It doesn't have the stars you know or watch on television. But don't confuse yourself. There's 1,700 players in the NFL. I would make the argument Josh Allen is not a top 200 player today. He's not. If Lavonte David, the linebacker for the Bucs, is 100, Josh Allen's not a top 200 player in the NFL. He just looks the part. That is just half of it. That may not even be half of it in the NFL. All right, so we got this baseball thing. The Marlins have canceled their game because of the corona spread against Baltimore. Now, most people don't care because these are not good teams. But now postponed are the Yankees and Phillies, and this is a problem. The advantage the NFL has on all of this, and Joy and I have talked about this, the NFL can watch the bubble and can watch soccer and can watch baseball and can just watch all this stuff and go, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. It's a huge advantage. If this thing would have broken out in September, I got news for you. You know, the NBA and baseball would look like geniuses. So I do believe the NFL is going to get through this. Baseball's got two issues. Number one, the players didn't want a bubble. They didn't want to play in Florida and Arizona. It's the summer. Believe me, I get it. I totally get that. Number two is they got a lot of travel. Even with a condensed schedule, baseball's got a ton of travel. Here's the advantage the NFL has. They have 8 road games. And in the NFL, you literally go to a city, check into your hotel, do a walk around, grab dinner, do some film, get up, play, go home. In baseball, you go to a city, first thing guys do, man, they get their golf clubs, they go out, and the Marlins got young players. Baltimore's got, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, the Yankees have veteran players. The Dodgers, a lot of the high payroll teams, they have veteran players. Red Sox usually do. Maybe the Cubs do. But a lot of these young teams in baseball, these average teams, they got young kids. They got a bunch of guys under 26 years old, 25. They get to a city for 3 days. They're not going to their room. They're going to go hang out. And so the NFL has a real advantage here. Not many road games. The other thing the NFL has, I believe as COVID spreads and we move into the fall, states are going to keep bars closed, close more restaurants, close the gyms, the barber shops. As this thing ramps up, you could have more closures state to state. What does that mean? That's an advantage. And in the NFL, we've talked about this before, football practice is hard. And that what happens over the course of a season for an NFL player, a lot of them, football players tend to get married sooner than other sports. Is it because they spend a longer time in college? Is it because NFL players know it's a shorter career? They put their money away sooner. They get married sooner, have kids sooner in the earning years. I don't really know the answer to this. But what you find in the NFL with a lot of players is during the season, it's facility, home, facility, home, facility, home, lift, workout, sweat, home. That's what an NFL regular season looks like. In the offseason, boom, guys are out to the second half. Guys party, guys have fun, guys move. But in an NFL regular season, you see a lot of these players, only 8 road trips, facility home, with all the closures around America. I think the NFL gets through the season. I don't know with baseball. They're not doing the bubble, and there's a lot of road trips and a lot of young players and a lot of teams that don't have big budgets. I don't know what's going to happen. I thought baseball was very good this weekend, but if you told me in 2-3 weeks you had 9 teams couldn't play, I'd be like, well, no bubble, a lot of players on the road, many days, tough. It's a tough one for baseball, and I don't know what they're going to do. I thought they had a great weekend, but I think it's a tough one for them.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, Colin right, Colin wrong. We do it every Monday. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
Rob Manfred got crushed by everybody. Oh, he's the worst commissioner. And I said, just settle down, settle down. We're going to have a baseball season. It's going to be fine. The ratings are going to be great. What do we do this weekend? Unbelievable ratings. ESPN broke records. Fox up like 30%. And I got to be honest with you, it looked pretty good. I watched three games in the Dodgers-Giants series and highlights from the rest of them. And for a sport built in gigantic stadiums and no fans, I thought it worked. The ratings were fantastic. This pandemic is creating very unique challenges. As Joy mentioned last week, baseball may have more challenges because the ball, it's always reminding you the ball's going into the stands. It's always reminding you there's nobody at these games. But I thought baseball looked great. I watched the games. It felt different. It wasn't as, there's not enough juice. But I think overwhelmingly, it was a great first weekend for baseball.
Where Colin was wrong.
Listen, I've been supporting Adam Gase for years. I do think he has a lot of qualities of Kyle Shanahan, but he's becoming a problem now, and this will be his last year unless they have a winning record. If Jamal Adams is correct in what he said about Adam Gase, he basically doesn't communicate with any of the players or not enough of the star players. It's a big problem. He's just not a great communicator, and you can say what you want. Andy Reid, John Harbaugh, Pete Carroll, the great coaches in this league, even Belichick. You ask players, they're like, oh, he's a great teacher. He's a great communicator. People will tell you about Belichick. He'll teach you football. You ask questions, Bill's got answers. Adam Gase is in trouble in New York because if Jamal Adams can go, Joe Douglas can certainly fire a coach.
Where Colin was right.
Ian Rappaport at Rap Sheet says the unsung hero in the football CBA negotiations over the weekend was Andy Reid. I've been supporting Andy Reid for 15 years, one of the smartest guys ever, a total player's coach. Michael Vick talks about him like he's his dad. Players love Andy Reid, and apparently Reid stepped in this weekend, and he got everybody in the players' union through this thing and said, he basically told the owners, guys, we got to bend on this stuff. These guys are making huge sacrifices for us, and he's one of the few head coaches that gives Bill Belichick trouble because he basically every Sunday he's got a different playbook. But not a shock that the great Andy Reid, that's why the Super Bowl win was so just and special. This guy deserves a Super Bowl. He's just such, the guys love him, the players love him, the owners love him. Nobody in the NFL deserve one more. Not a shock the CBA this weekend figured out by Andy Reid.
Where Colin was wrong.
I think this is the easiest year ever to give LeBron the MVP. New coach, new system, new teammates, new star teammate, and oh, by the way, new position. And he's putting up unbelievable numbers, and the Lakers are the number one seed in the West by 5.5 games. And he's not going to win the MVP. Yep, 17 to the 20 writers, ESPN.com, are going to choose Giannis. LeBron's odds are 10 to 1. I know you think I'm a LeBron fanboy, but this is an easy one. This is an easy one. New coach, new system, new players. I mean, God, the roster is brand new. And new position. And you lead the West by 5.5 games. This is the easy LeBron one. I mean, this is why this award for me is the coach of the year in the NBA and the NBA player of the year MVP. I don't get it. If you don't see LeBron as the MVP, most valuable player, could Giannis have gotten a new coach, a new system, all new teammates, and lead the West by 5.5 games? Let's start with no and work our way from there.
Where Colin was right.
You know, I like change. Baseball struggles with it. But baseball decided to, and I love this idea, we're going to start extra inning games with a runner at second. We don't want 17 inning games. What do you know? They did it four times this weekend, and all four times, 10th inning, game over. So it worked exactly as planned. What baseball says is we go to extra innings, we want to speed this puppy up. We don't want teams with the virus, we can't do the makeup games. Let's get these things done as fast as we can. And the Mets and Braves, Rays and Jays, A's and Angels, and Cleveland and Kansas City, 4-for-4. Game ended in the 10th inning.
Where Colin was right.
Brian Brodus, a former scout in the NFL and former Cowboy coach, went on the radio in Dallas last weekend and said, when asked about Dak, at this point, I don't think he wants to be on the team. He won't say it, he won't show it. He's strong, he's a stud, but I don't think he's happy, is what he basically said. This has always been my feeling about Dak and Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy was asked a week after getting the job if he talked to Dak, and he said no. I don't even get that. But the difference is, I do sort of understand it. Dak needed Jason Garrett, and Jason Garrett needed Dak. Mike McCarthy doesn't need Dak for his legacy or his Super Bowl or his money or his job security for the next 3 years. And I think Dak can sense that. People can tell me they love each other, but Dak's smart enough to know I lost my guy, and now I have to prove myself all over again, and it does not shock me at all. Not to mention, I totally get professional athletes, especially quarterbacks, not liking the franchise tag. I would not like it. If I was Aaron Rodgers and they couldn't get me a defense, and I knew I was trapped for the rest of my career mostly, I wouldn't like it either. Tom Brady didn't have real free agency until the very end. And what did he do? Used it. The minute he had it, he used it.
Where Colin was wrong.
I never thought Cam in New England was a perfect fit. New England's very much system over player. Cam is the star, the guy. But at Logan Airport, Cam arrived in Boston, and he went all in on the Patriot way.
Cam, I'm so sorry to do this to you. You're live right now with Channel 7. I'm sorry. I know you didn't want to talk. Anything that you can say to Patriots Nation right now, again, you're live with Channel 7.
No disrespect to nobody, but I'm extremely ecstatic. But I'm not talking. That's pretty much, you know.
When can we expect you to say a few more words for us?
Who knows?
Excited to be here in Boston?
Go pass. Thank you.
That is so Tom Brady, it hurts. That is the Patriot way, baby, and I like that, Cam.
Where Colin was right.
When Joe Douglas got the job, I called all my NFL guys, and they're like, this guy's going to be great for the Jets. We'll see what he can do. But I will say this about Joe Douglas. If you knew I had to sell my home, and Joy was going to buy it, and she knew I had to sell it for a reason, she'd have all the leverage. Once Jamal Adams called out Adam Gase, everybody in the league knew Jets had to move off him. To get two firsts, a third, and a starting safety was excellent, considering now you lose Jamal Adams, but that's a big haul, considering everybody in the league knew they wanted to trade him. I mean, that's remember, Steelers only gave up one first-round pick. They got double that and a third and a starting safety. The Jets may have their issues and be a tire fire, but that was a really good haul for a team, frankly, that did not have a ton of leverage. This was not a quarterback you're moving. This was not an edge rusher. This was not an elite corner. It's a box safety. A lot of teams don't want to spend the money on a box safety.
Where Colin was right.
Tom Thibodeau got hired by the Knicks, a five-year deal. Shocking, another uninspiring head coaching hire. He's been fired twice. He just looks like practice would be no fun. It's increasingly an offensive league, and he's Mr. Grinded Out defensive coach. I'm sure he knows basketball. But New York needs a coach that can attract free agents because James Dolan is repellent for free agents. You gotta get somebody who doesn't look like my accountant and wants long practices and is Mr. Defense. This is why I never got the move off Fizdale. Liked and respected. He couldn't get a sit down with KD. What's that tell you? It's a process. It's going to take a lot of time. This feels like, hey, who's a guy that's won some games in the NBA? Does he fit what the Knicks want to be? Is this attractive for free agents? I don't get it. But again, I'm right because I'm not surprised at all. The top candidate's out.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So let's go to the best hair in the business, Nick Swisher, who's got unbelievable hair. All right. Now, let me ask you, tell the audience, how often do you get that beautiful crop cut?
You got to stay in the chair, Colin. Once a week, once every 7 to 10 days, baby. That's it. You got to stay in the chair.
Okay. All right. We got that. We're doing haircut questions from now on. Okay. So I sat and watched a lot of baseball this weekend. First of all, here's what I loved. Baseball's got this new rule. They're playing around with it. They tried it in the minors. You go to extra innings, you put a guy on second base. So, and it worked 4 for 4 this weekend. As a player, do you think it's cheesy or hurting the game? How does it land for you?
I don't know. I mean, from not being a player, the only advice that I could say is that this is 2020. This is a crazy year. We have to be fluid with the things that are happening, right? So let's try different things. We've got the expanded rosters this year, expanded playoffs. I think we're trying a lot of things to move our game forward. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of strategy that goes into that, right? Do you walk the next batter? Do you set up the double play? Because the last thing we need right now in a shortened season with everything that's happening is for an extra inning game to go 17 innings.
Right.
Next thing you know, they're calling up the entire taxi squad, trying to do whatever they can to get guys on the field. This is a year where we have to think of health first. And I definitely think this definitely saves a lot of pitchers' arms by putting that runner on second base.
So I watched a lot of Dodgers this weekend. I knocked open a Corona, and I sat and watched Dodgers-Giants, and the Dodgers lineup is unbelievable. It's MVPs, it's talent, it's 30 jacks, it's just nothing. It's guys you can move around. But Kershaw's out. And you know, and then I watched them against the Giants, and the Giants got really good pitching this weekend in a couple of games, and you look up and you're like, Dodgers should have dominated this series, and San Francisco's walking out with a win or two. So I look at Kershaw, and I think to myself, okay, Nick Swisher joining us. Lot of innings. Is the injury a problem for the Dodgers?
Yeah, I definitely think it's something you're going to have to pay attention to. I mean, just look at Corey Kluber, right, with the Texas Rangers. He comes out after the first inning, right? That was that one guy that you expected to be there the entire season. The one thing I could say about Clayton is he's been in this position before. It seems every year we go back to a little low back injury that he has to take care of and get himself right. So is this something that I am super worried about? No. But is this something that Clayton's going to have to hurdle through to help his team get to the World Series? 100%. Because I don't think if you have a Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers win the World Series. But with a healthy Clayton Kershaw, he's still got what he's got, man. There's no doubt about it. He's thrown a lot of innings, but he knows how to pitch. And anytime you can have that guy on the mound for you every fifth or sixth day, depending on what your rotation is, I'll take him every time.
The Dodgers are an interesting mix of youth, international players, veterans. It's a really – and they've got depth. Is that the best roster in baseball, or do you like somebody else?
Yeah, I love the Dodgers in the National League. There's no doubt about it. Come on, come on, Colin. You know who I'm going for, baby.
I
need those pinstripes, baby. The New York Yankees, in my opinion, have to be the best team in baseball. Now, at the beginning of spring training this year, would I have said that? No, because half the roster was hurt. But now, after spring training 2.0, everybody is healthy. Giancarlo is back better than ever. He's leaned out. He's comfortably strong in his legs. Aaron Judge is healthy. He's got that shoulder plumbed up. Aaron Hicks is back. He's good, right? James Paxton, who was banged up with that low back injury, and they have Gerrit Cole. I don't think there's any team in baseball that is as deep of a pitching staff as the New York Yankees are. And they are also one of the few teams in baseball that didn't run out and put all their top prospects on their taxi squad. Because whether they need them or not, bringing up a rookie that has no time in the big leagues or no understanding of how important things are, they don't have to go through that. They have the guys that they know they can win with, and whether it's a shortened World Series or not, a World Series is a World Series.
By the way, you know, we see some games postponed today, and I said in the NFL, you only have 8 road games, and for whatever reason, a lot of football players get married sooner. They go to the facility, they work out, they go home. They go to the facility, work out, they go home. And then they only 8 times do they go on the road. Baseball's different. It's more international. Players, right. You can get on some of these bottom teams, a lot of young kids, prospects, 22 years old. It's a lot of travel. You go on the road for a place 3 or 4 days. Guys aren't going to go to their hotel room. You know, and I said the joy, if I played baseball and I had 60 games in 75 days, come on, Nick, I'd have to go out occasionally. Is it unrealistic to ask all these players to just protocols, discipline, never leave your hotel room?
It's hard. I mean, I was hearing a lot of the things that were being said earlier today, saying, why would they even try the season? They knew this wasn't going to work if they didn't have a bubble. And you got to give the NBA credit. They've done a heck of a job of keeping this virus outside of their bubble. That's the one thing that I think baseball understood going into the season, that that's the reason why there's 60-man taxi squads. That's the reason why the rosters are as much as they are. So if there is a rash of 8 to 10 guys that might be a quarantine for 2 weeks, I mean, 2 weeks worth of games this season is 21% of the season. So I think whatever team has health, whether it's virus or whether it's injury related, I think the team that can stay the healthiest and keep their guys in check the best. Listen, man, at the end of the day, it's hard to do, right? These guys have families, and that's exactly – you want them to go home healthy to their families every night. Believe me, I love sports just as much as everybody else does. But if we put these guys at risk to take any of these viruses back to their home, to their families, to their loved ones, anything like that, that's the last thing we would want to happen.
I want to ask you about two players. So I can remember when I'm a kid and I'm watching Dave Winfield play. And Dave Winfield.
Oh, he was awesome.
Oh, my God.
He was so awesome.
But he looked awesome. He could have played in the NBA, the NFL. He looked like a tight end. And then there's Mookie Betts. He's not a physical stature. He's not right. Aaron Judge. And everybody's telling me Mookie Betts could be the best player in baseball. So what is it with him? Because there are players that you look at and you're like, okay, I mean, I can watch football, basketball. LeBron's just bigger than all the dudes. What is it about Mookie Betts? Is it hand-eye? Is it reactions, athleticism? What makes him maybe the best player in baseball?
I think it's all those things you just said, Colin, right there. I mean, I love me some Mookie Betts just as much as anybody else. And to be able to have him and Cody Bellinger in the same lineup, wow. I mean, that's almost unheard of. Back to, you know, both MVP winners in the same lineup. I mean, that's impressive. But I think the one thing that Mookie has is you got to appreciate the way he handles his business, right? He always does things the right way. He loves the game. He loves his team. I don't know whether it's, you know, strong wrist, hand eye. Maybe it's that it factor that he has that other people don't. But every time he takes that field, he's one of those guys, as my man Dontrell Willis would say, I'd pay money to go see. He's one of those guys that can transcend the game both on and off the field. And let's be honest, man, this guy's probably an athlete everything he does. I don't know how many 300 bowling games he's got. I'm sure he's probably great at everything he does. But to be able to watch that man on the field each and every day, man, is a blessing for us all.
Now let's talk about size. Giancarlo Stanton for the Yankees. Now, they bring him in last year. I didn't really get it because they had Aaron Judge, and he was basically free by Yankee standard. Giancarlo Stanton offers a lot of the same tools, but was highly expensive, and the Marlins got rid of the contract. What do you expect? He looks a little different this year.
Oh, I mean, how good does he look, right? I mean, last year, I think we saw, you know, I mean, the last couple of years, he's been kind of hit with that injury bug a little bit. But I don't know what he did, man, during spring training and spring training 2.0. But all of a sudden, he came back. He's leaner. He looks taller than what he was.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he's hitting baseballs further than it looks like he ever has in his life. He's, you know, you got to remember, as an athlete and as those years wear and tear on the body, the lighter you are, the better you feel sometimes. From a guy that had knee injuries, well, 1 pound on your belly is worth 3 pounds on your knees. So you got to remember, man, Giancarlo coming back lean, trim, and being the guy Yankee fans always knew he could be, it's going to be so much fun to watch him in the future, man. He's healthy. The knee is healthy. No knee breaks, no none of that. And, dude, he's catching those handoffs coming down the third baseline, hopefully every day for the Yankees.
What is that again? So one – what is that – pound in your belly on your knees? Say that again.
Yeah, 1 pound on your body is 3 pounds on your knees. Because once you start running, right, that extra weight, you know, compounds on your knees. For Giancarlo to come back all trimmed up the way he is, man, could not be more proud of him, man. He's going to have a great season this year.
Was that Nick Swisher? Did you make that up, or is that like a real thing?
I don't know. It sounded good when I said it, man. I was just rolling with it. I could have sworn I thought a doctor told me that.
I'm for it.
It sounds right, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Right?
Rest of my life, that's all I'm going to think about. That line. The great Nick Swisher. I love you, brother. Good seeing you.
Man, love you, Colin. Joy, take it easy, guys. Good to see y'all.
All right, Nick Swisher.